This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we talk some James Franklin coffee takes, Bo Prabula's potential usage the rest of the season, and we will preview the Northwestern game this week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome into the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football beat writer at the Center Daily Times, and I am joined, as always, by Audrey Snyder, Penn State beat reporter of The Athletic. Audrey? How's it going?
John, happy Tuesday. I think we're both like feeling a little bit better than we were when we did this on Sunday after the night game. Yes. However, night game, caffeine consumption comes up after that. James Franklin at his Tuesday news conference was asking everyone our thoughts on how we take our coffee. If we like coffee. By the way,
this came up out of nowhere. Usually there's a connection. This one was like, this is clearly bothering him.
Yeah, clearly, like, maybe he's over-caffeinated, right? And, like, he didn't know what to say, so it's like, let me ask everybody about their caffeine. I think we found something out today about James Franklin that is quite alarming. I think after 10 seasons with the guy, the fact that he said he does not have a coffee maker in his home, that bothers me.
This is a perfectly rational thing, and I hate to break it to you.
I think it's crazy, right? Like,
I don't own a coffee maker.
But John, here's the thing. What do you do when guests come over? What do you do when people spend the night?
Tell them to find somewhere to get. There's a Dunkin' conveniently located, probably less than a mile away.
So you're a horrible host. There are some sheets
or rudders.
You're a horrible host. James Franklin makes a lot of money and does not have a coffee maker, but he only has one in the office. That to me is like, I left the press conference today with more questions than I've ever had, and none of them had to do with football. All because of this, which also took me back to his intro presser when he said he didn't drink caffeine at that time or he didn't drink coffee. Now he's like shifted into it. He's a black coffee drinker, but hates it. I don't know. We got a lot going on this week. And I think they're probably getting ramped up on Red Bull over in the Lash building as we speak.
Yeah. I don't mind coffee, to be clear. Like, I'll drink Starbucks. I prefer iced coffee. I've just never. So when I was in grad school, I would brew my own coffee at home, and like I had a coffee maker then. But my wife doesn't drink coffee. I don't really drink coffee unless like I really need caffeine or something like that. So there's just no need for one, you know. But listen, for a guy who drinks coffee regularly like he does, I don't understand how he doesn't own one. It does not make any sense to me. It is a little bit concerning that he drinks as much of it as he does without having it available at his own home.
The people that we cover, John, they're nothing like us. It's made me start to reconsider my own caffeine consumption. I have a coffee pot. I have a French press. I have an electric, like, rapid boiler for tea. I'm a big herbal tea drinker. I have a Keurig, too. I've got a lot of options here. But, yeah, James Franklin and I, apparently we are just not at all alike when it comes to the amount of caffeine that we keep in our homes and the amount of coffee.
I have a Brita water filter thing, and I drink water, and that's
what are you like back in college?
Yeah, kind of a little bit. Listen, I'm barely a self-sustaining adult here, but yeah, it was an interesting press conference today. That was a major theme of it. Before we get into it though, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, watch us on YouTube, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps a new podcast like ours get discovered by fellow Nittany Lions fans. We greatly appreciate that. But yeah, this press conference today leading up to the Northwestern game, the coffee discussion, I think, is part of a broader point that the Northwestern game is not kind of, I mean, I'm sure they're preparing, to be clear, they're going to do the 1-0 thing. They're preparing for it. They're going to be prepared for Saturday's game. But I think it's very clear that maybe there aren't the high stress levels about this game that there were against Iowa and that there will be against Ohio State and Michigan later this year.
Or else they're like too many Celsius and Red Bulls into this thing and they're just revving.
Celsius
like,
mentioned. I'm not going to lie. I still don't fully understand what Celsius is. I've seen commercials,
I have no idea.
But never fully pay attention. Okay, good. So we're on the same page on that front.
Yeah, I don't mess with energy drinks.
Very willing to try it. It seems like there are a lot of people endorsing it that I trust. So maybe I will have a Celsius.
Maybe you and James can share a Celsius one day. The thing that got me about this press conference, what I found most interesting today, James Franklin, he's been hinting since the spring about the Bo Prabula package and are we going to see it? What's it going to look like? Today, I thought this was probably as close to as definitive as he's been of saying that, like, it's going to happen. I have the quote in front of me because I don't want to mess it up. One of the things he said, right now, Bo's being used primarily as a runner, but we feel like we can run the whole offense with him. He's getting it in practice a lot, obviously, and I think it's been really good, but we want to continue to develop that. And then there's a place for getting him in situationally throughout the game as well. Maybe it's in the red zone, or maybe on third down, or maybe as a changeup. So shades of Tommy Stevens Lion Package 2.0, John?
So here's the thing, and this is partially because of the Tommy Stevens Lion Package. Mm-hmm. I'll just believe it when I see it. Like, I understand what he's doing and why he's saying it. Honestly, I don't think it's a bad idea to say it, just to even make the other team think that it's a possibility. Right. You know, if you can get them to waste five practice reps on preparing for something that just isn't going to exist. Like,
some poor GA somewhere is going to have one extra Red Bull because of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so, like, I have a hard time envisioning this being a key part of the offense. I have honestly a hard time believing that it'll exist. You don't take your best player off the field, and Drew Aller might be the team's best player. Now, if you want to kind of incorporate like two quarterbacks at a time, maybe it's a throwback or something like that. Sure. That seems like it could be potentially helpful down the road. If there's anything with like just taking Aller off the field and having Prabula out there to run a play or two, I can't get with it, because even like the situation you'd want to use that in, like maybe it's a short yardage situation, like it's a fourth and one or a third and one that's crucial, or fourth and goal that's close. Quarterback 6'5", 240. I think he can get that one on his own.
Like, we've seen the tush push. We've seen them go all in on that. Players did say after the game that, you know, the offensive linemen, they've been watching that Eagles film. We talked about it on Sunday on our post-game podcast. You know, but here's the thing with this. I do think we're going to see it at some point this year. I really do. Now, when it happens, we're all going to argue whether or not it's the right thing to do based off of how the play goes. Because I remember when we had this same conversation with Tommy Stevens, and it was like, okay, well, you're taking the ball out of your quarterback's hands. Why are you doing this? So it does feel really familiar. But the fact that he continues to say this, the other thing I found Sunday, I was looking for a completely different quote about something else. So I was going through my files, and I did find back in the spring where James Franklin said that if these defensive ends continue to develop as pass rushers, there could be some situations where they'd put the three of them on the field together and let one of them rush from the interior. And lo and behold, that's exactly what we got against Iowa with Chop Robinson and that new look package. So again, is he saying it just to say it? I don't think so. I think there's some validity to it, but I do get what you're saying, John, right? Like, this is one more thing for teams to prepare for. Now, the good thing is Bo Prabula has played a ton, and James Franklin did mention that they've been trying to get him in a series earlier so he gets some work with the first team offense, which is also, I mean, it's just crazy when you start looking at the snap counts of how things have unfolded for this team so far. You and I both did not expect that we would have seen this much Bo Prabula this early in the season through four games now, but that's just kind of the way things are going. But yeah, to me, that was a really interesting comment. I will go on the record and say that I think we do see the Prabula package at this year. John, yes or no?
I'm going to say no. I just, like, so not in any meaningful way. I'll say it that way. So, like, maybe.
Oh, now you have all these clarifiers. Okay.
Well, I think, because we technically have seen the Bo Prabula package already, right? Because he's played with the first team for that series.
No, you know? I'm talking about specialty package, red zone, goal line, something like that.
Right. I don't think it'll be in a game that's within two scores. I think that probably qualifies as meaningful. Do you think that's fair? I think that, you know what I mean? Like, nothing that, like, of real consequence, like, not in a major situation that matters. Here's the thing. The other part of this is, and we can partially discuss this now, is the merits of doing something like that, like you mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is it worth taking Aller off the field? Because as much as James likes to say that everyone, I think he's including the media in this, just reacts based on the results of plays, I like to think that a more process-oriented, shout out to the Sixers for that. They ingrained that into me about 12 years ago.
And what did that get us, John? What did that get us?
Sadness, a lot of sadness.
A lot of pain.
But I think it's, you know, what matters more is the thought that goes behind it. And if it is correct, you know, statistically, mathematically, all that stuff. Right. And that's why I don't think this is a good idea. I'm saying it now, even if it has a lot of success, like, I still don't think it's a good idea because it's taking Drew Aller off the field. It's making it, honestly, your best playmakers in Keandre Lambert Smith, Theo Johnson, it's kind of taking them out of plays a little bit, because are you going to trust Prabula to throw passes to them like in tight windows or anything like that? Like,
I think he does trust this guy. I think that's why he keeps talking so highly about him all offseason. I think there's legitimate belief. He said that they planned on against Iowa, that they had a play that they were going to use. And then he said he vetoed it, which I found interesting. Cause again, was it a matter of the game had gotten out of hand at that point, so you didn't want to show it? Is he just saying this? I don't know, but he said they were coming out of a timeout and they vetoed it. I think he genuinely believes in Bo Prabula and that we're going to see it at some point this year.
Well, by the way, if he meant like a timeout, we can probably pretty easily find this play when we go back and rewatch it, which is something I plan on doing later this week. So hopefully,
because there was the early timeout with the defense that they took because they had 10 guys on the field. Because I started thinking through that of like, okay, when was this? I'm curious. But then he didn't. I'm fairly confident he meant against Iowa, but he said yesterday. So I don't.
Yeah, that was.
No, he said meant practice. If the Celsius was kicking in, I don't know.
Yeah, it was all that the black coffee that he's drinking. But no, I'm fairly certain that he meant Saturday against Iowa. Which, like I said, maybe we can pinpoint it, and then it becomes an easier discussion to have, right? If it was an option, and that goes to the larger point too. If he vetoed it, that means Yursich, I assume, wanted to make that call, and this isn't, I assume, the first time that he's vetoed Yursich, right? He's mentioned that he's in the headset saying things like, don't forget bored. To run the ball, don't get bored, like, this is working, keep going back to this and all that stuff, which I think is really interesting. Doesn't matter now. They're undefeated. They've been wildly successful through four games, but something to monitor down the road this season, I think, too. But back to Prabula, I just, if he truly thinks that Bo Prabula in a specific situation gives them a better chance of success than Drew Aller, I can't imagine that's passing the ball. You know what I mean? Unless there's so much window dressing or there's so much to the play itself that it creates such a wide advantage that you wouldn't get with Aller out there. But I don't see that being, honestly, like I said, short yardage, send Aller out there, let him figure it out. Send Catron Allen. You have T formation. You have all sorts of things. Like, it's tough for me to envision a scenario where the best move is to take Aller off the field and put Prabula in there.
Well, we'll revisit this coming out of Columbus when we probably see it. And John's,
I was going to say, that'll be the time. That's what I'm eating crow.
That's going to be, yeah.
It's a trip after.
It does feel like something that we're going to continue to talk about this throughout the season. And part of that is because James Franklin has mentioned it so many times that I do think, right, he's very intentional with his words. I've been covering the guy since the day he got here. He doesn't typically just say things to say things, right? The coffee thing today, that was kind of weird, but I think it was, again, one of those examples. I want to know what
that intent was.
It's trying to get people to loosen up, one. I think, two, it's also a stall tactic, right? We probably lost one or two questions today because of all the questions about coffee and how do we like our coffee, tea, all of that, whatever. But we talked about it last week. He's been really loose this year. He's been more kind of free-flowing in these press conference settings. And then usually the Wednesday post-practice setting has like a more tense, because it usually reflects, it seems like however the practice goes, that's how he goes when he comes in. And you and I will be there tomorrow night. We'll see. We've got a bunch of player availability tomorrow. We'll get our practice viewing window to kind of see where things stand. But yeah, this, by the looks of it, seems to be a pretty healthy team right now. He did mention Harrison Wallace III today and said that, he was cleared to play, but it still seems like they're easing him back in, right? He's still not, this isn't a full snap count load that we saw him take on last week. So for me, that's something to keep an eye on. And I think too, James Franklin was asked about the receiving core and where do things stand? Because I always like to think of the season in different parts, right? We're four games into it now. So we're 1/3 of the way through the regular season. And what have you learned about your receiving core? Like, what stood out? And it sounds like they're pretty much kind of where they were a month ago, right? Where they feel good about Keandre Lambert Smith, as well they should. They feel good about Harrison Wallace, even though he's coming off this injury. And then there's everyone else, and they're still waiting for those guys to separate. Cause for concern or not, John?
Excellent pun, waiting for those guys to separate. Well done.
I didn't even intend that one.
Oh, I know. It was still excellent. So I think I'm alone on Cephas Island at this point. Which is fine. I have been here a while.
Is that near Revis Island?
Yeah, it's a similar
Western
idea.
PA, yeah.
Right. Uh, I I think he's their third best receiver, if not their second best receiver at this point. That's not a knock on. I think he's in the mix, I guess, with that top group is a better way to phrase that. I am not as concerned about the receivers because of that. And because I think those other guys, it's not a situation where it's like, okay, they don't have enough guys that can play. It's they have a bunch of guys who are just good enough to play, and you can kind of ride the hot hand with the second group. Right. And you can, you can go from there. I think Cephas has, I've said this before, just as much upside as anyone in that group right now. I thought he was getting open consistently against Iowa. I kind of think that role is going to continue to grow. We saw him start on Saturday, which matters as much as I think people would tell you it doesn't matter. I think it does matter that they trust him to go out there and play a bunch of reps, to play with Aller a bunch, you know, just to to make sure they're on the same page. But yeah, he was finding himself open. So no, I'm not as concerned with the receiver room as I am with the running game, honestly, right now. I think the receivers are in a good place, and really they just have to be in a good enough place because the quarterback's good enough to throw them open to fit into those tight windows. But yeah, I think I'm more confident than I was at the beginning of this season, even if it seems that James Franklin and company may not be, or at least have kind of stayed along the same path.
The running backs. Yes. I'll have a story up Wednesday on The Athletic. I like to do this little fact versus myth format where we kind of bring to the forefront most of the major storylines around this team. And I, as the judge and jury, decide whether it's a fact or myth. I get into the run game. I get into a lot of statistics behind it. I don't want to spoil the story, but we've got a lot of numbers in there. It is slightly concerning just because I think when we thought of this season, when we thought of this offense, we thought of both of these backs being among the best running backs in college football. The numbers right now don't dictate that. Now, yes, the reps are, they've been split very evenly. That's important. How many times have we heard about the wear and tear and how this is going to get both of Nick Singleton and Catron Allen to the next level? But at some point, the productivity, you have to start to say, okay, when's it going to click? When's it going to happen? Part of that too, I mean, you look at Iowa, you look at Illinois, you look at West Virginia, they've played some good defenses, some decent defenses to varying degrees when you lump the three of those together. That's part of it. But still, right, like I think at this point in the year, we would have expected that Nick Singleton would have had a monster breakout game. We would have expected that Catron Allen would have gone over 100 yards more than once with that game coming against Delaware, right? What needs to happen, and or do we see this run game get on track against Northwestern, John? Do you think, is this finally the week, or am I going to have to keep writing about this until it gets fixed?
I think we're all going to be writing about this for a little bit still. Probably not against UMass.
Why?
If we're being honest there.
Well, true. Yeah.
I've actually thought Catron has been pretty good this year. I haven't seen as many issues. Part of that is he's falling forward. The pass protection stuff that James, again, says that no one talks about, but you and I have definitely talked about in the past. He's an excellent pass protector for a running back, like shockingly good for a sophomore in college. Has no business being at that level of a pass protector. Really good receiver, too. He had the one drop against Illinois on the ball that Drew Aller threw in over the top, over his shoulder, and it got knocked out on a difficult pass, a difficult catch. But he's been really good from that standpoint, which kind of elevates his value. Singleton is, and I want to be clear, I think these are two of the most talented backs in the country. I think they're both going to play in the NFL for a long time. This is not a long-term concern for these guys. But I think Singleton has been concerning from a lateral standpoint because he is trying to get side to side a little bit too much. Part of me wonders if there's maybe some tension to break that big run, to have that big play, right? Because he hasn't had the enormous breakout game yet. And so he's not getting downhill as much. He seems like he's kind of waiting, trying to find the space. And, you know, it's a 2-yard gain, which, listen, it's better than going backwards, but it's still not the kind of success you want to have in the running game, which is why Allen is having more success. And frankly, you mentioned the opponents, like these guys are supposed to be good enough to outplay those opponents, right? Like in Iowa, sure, best defense in the country, in my opinion, that's understandable. Illinois and West Virginia, like they should just be better than them. They should be able to make more happen, especially with how good the offensive line has been. So I do have concerns there. That being said, Northwestern's not that good. They're a better defensive team than offensive team, but that feels like a backhanded compliment because their offense is one of the worst in the country. So maybe they get back on track just because this defense is so bad. But I am worried that like this kind of isn't sticking against even above average to good opponents so far. And like, I think they need to see more production from Singleton from a consistency standpoint. I think Catron Allen kind of is doing what you'd expect him to do. You'd still like to see him take a step forward, maybe get to the second and third level a little more, although he's doing that, I think, more than Singleton has. But still an area of concern for me no matter what. And I don't know if, even if they are that good against Northwestern, I don't know if it's going to be enough to kind of sway my opinion of how they've played so far this year because of the level of opponent they're facing.
Yeah, one game doesn't make it problem solved, right?
Right.
You got to see this consistently. But yeah, you mentioned too, kind of peeking ahead, got the idle week, then you got UMass, and then, oh yeah, you better be able to run the ball because then you're going to the horseshoe. So to me, that's how everything's going to be judged. That's what it's going to be based off of. Can you run the ball against these premier teams? So far, we haven't seen it, but I think you're right. Are we ready to shift gears into Northwestern, John? Are we ready this?
I don't know that we were joking pre-podcast. I don't know that anyone's ready to shift gears into Northwestern. This has been a tough watch, a tough week for me in my prep for this game. Not going to lie.
Let's also keep in perspective here that we watched the Illinois offense, Luke Altmyer throw four picks. Then all that was Iowa. We got to experience that. And now Northwestern, Penn State fans, you deserve several beverages for watching these three opponents. It also, to me, is always interesting when you go from a big-time game like a whiteout to whatever comes next. Like, there's just naturally that lull, right? I know everybody, I'm sure, they'll inside the Lash building, they'll dismiss it. It's not a thing, whatever. It's human nature, right? This town was buzzing last week. Now you're going to Evanston for the dreaded 11 a.m. kick, which we always will hear so much about, I'm sure, the 11 a.m. Central kick. But to me, the thing that James Franklin doesn't really have to hammer too much is that you've got a Northwestern team that's got some momentum, right? They come back against Minnesota in overtime after trailing by as many as 21 points. If ever there is a lesson about you have to keep your foot on the gas, you can't overlook an opponent, he's got it right in front of him with what Northwestern just did to Minnesota. So in that regard, you know, you feel like Penn State can work with something there. But, oh boy, John, I don't know where we even start with this. You've got interim coach David Braun. I'm just hoping I make it through the entire podcast and don't call him Ryan Braun. I spent the summer covering the Brewers, and I'm just hoping I don't mess that up. But yeah, Northwestern's 2-2. The other one win came against UTEP, and that was in September. So again, Penn State is not a UTEP level opponent. Ben Bryant, though, I think their quarterback, I do think you need to pay a lot of attention to him. He's going to try to throw the ball a lot. But again,
big time emphasis defense on try.
Yeah.
Big emphasis on try. It's just, this is a really bad offense. Mm-hmm. It's an offense that views itself as a passing offense, which is probably fair because it's definitely better at throwing the ball than running the ball. It's just really bad at both. They are going to lose up front consistently to Penn State's pass rush. They're going to lose up front when those guys, you know, are trying to eat blocks and allow the linebackers to make plays in the running game. The receivers, like Bryce Kurtz, is decent. He's going to lose consistently to Kalen King.
Why the hell should Northwestern even get off the bus the way John's talking about it?
Honestly, kind of like it's going to be that kind of game. We'll get into our predictions later, but I think this is going to be ugly. Like they might score because the guy calling the plays is not Brian Ferentz, which we don't have to do.
I have them scoring. Yeah, I won't so spoil my prediction, but Yeah.
But it's an offense that can't move the ball. Frankly, miraculous. And James mentioned it today at his press conference that, you know, they came down from 21 in the fourth quarter against Minnesota, which is shocking when you consider how Minnesota plays and like that. He didn't mention this part, but Minnesota's defense is really good. So the fact that they scored 21 in the fourth quarter is pretty jarring. I don't think that's going to carry. I think that's a major fluke. Rutgers kind of just completely stalled out this offense for four quarters when they played in week one. It's a really bad offense. Like Ben Bryant, James mentioned, he was searching for the adjective to describe the fact that Bryant has transferred four times, and he just called it strange, which it is, because he's been at three different schools. But
Cincinnati,
you know what I mean?
Cincinnati,
Eastern Michigan, Cincinnati, mm-hmm. and now Northwestern, I believe. I feel for the team. It's the situation there is not good. Obviously, it's a rough spot. But
this it's grim. It's grim. Yeah.
It's gonna be really bad. Like this, honestly, I think this might be a bigger blowout than the UMass game. I'm not willing to go that far just yet, but I think that it has a chance to be that, because it's a bad matchup for Northwestern because the offense is so inept against such an elite defense.
And I was scrubbing through the Northwestern quotes today, looking through their press conference, kind of what was said. And one of the things that David Braun said was, he said, you know, he's like, we're looking at this defense and we can't find a weakness anywhere. Like they're really good at everything they do. And he's right. I mean, you and I, we've talked about it. We've written about it a lot. James Franklin was talking about it today. You look at the statistical categories, Penn State has the number one pass defense in the country. The plus 11 turnover margin is just mind bending. And that's obviously a credit to both sides of the ball, but you just look at what this defense has been able to do. Plus they've been able to stay really fresh, keep the snap counts low, which again, when Iowa only runs 33 plays, you're getting a very well-rested Penn State defense that then goes into Northwestern. And where I think, again, keeping it big picture here, because you and I both are on the same page with how this weekend's going to go, you should, if everything kind of goes the way we see it going, you should be able to keep the snap counts pretty low this week, right? You should be able to do the same thing against Northwestern coming off that bye week. This gears up really nice for Penn State, theoretically, to be really well rested going into Columbus. I do think for all the consternation about the schedule, about opening up on the road, about opening up the season with West Virginia, the schedule from here on out lays out really, really nice for Penn State. And that's just something to kind of keep in mind. And I think the other side of that too, with keeping the snap counts low, with blowing people out the way that they have, the way that we expect they will this weekend against Northwestern, you're building depth, right? You're getting these younger guys, these less experienced players, you're getting them on the field. You're going to need some of these players to step up down the stretch, right? It's a long season. Injuries are inevitable. But right now, it just feels like Penn State, from a health perspective, from a snap count perspective, they're in a really, really good spot. And so that, to me, is something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on in the second half. Because, again, at what point do you pull your starters out? At what point do you – maybe we see it earlier, right? Maybe we see I love when they start kind of filtering in some of the reserves early on in a game, because that really tells you what they think. Yeah. Like, you know, and you start to see substitution patterns, and when does this guy come in, and you say, oh yeah, he's on the field really early. Like you get a feel for these things. So for me, that's something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. John, one glaring problem, issue, concern for Penn State right now, special teams. This is something that you got to get it cleaned up. You got to get it figured out. James Franklin mentioned at the press conference that this year they've been more aggressive on fourth downs. And I don't know if in my head I'm trying to link this together, or I don't know if he meant it this way or not. But we go back to that Delaware game. There were some opportunities for some field goals that Penn State, we saw them go for on fourth downs instead of, you know, bypass the field goal. Is that part of this, right? Is that something where are they being aggressive just because they want to be more aggressive? That's a philosophical thing. Or is it, hey, we're being more aggressive because we don't have a ton of confidence in our kicking game right now?
I think the right process here is for it to be aggression, because aggression is smart, right? Because aggression generally helps you.
You get stopped on fourth down and bypass the field goal.
Right. But
I'll hold you to that, John. Yeah.
Listen, I said it last night watching the Eagles play the Buccaneers. You know, they went for it on fourth down, did not get it, and I was totally fine with it, right? That's the nature of the beast. I think aggression is almost always the right decision. You don't sit right next to me in the press box, but occasionally you will hear me on like...
Thank you, God. Yeah. They gave me a nice buffer, yeah.
poor Bob Flounders of Penn Live has to listen to me say things on like fourth and three that they should go for it when on they're on like the minus 45 yard line. Because I genuinely think when you have an offense that outmatches the defense, then you can expect that you can get 4 yards per play. I think it's smart to go for it and keep your foot on the gas there, especially against a team like Iowa where they're trying to play that field position battle. And if you can get aggressive with them, you could have beaten them. But yeah, I think it's – I don't know if there's a connection. Like I said, I think – if I were a Penn State fan, I would hope that it's because aggression is the right decision, not just because mm-hmm. there's no faith in the special teams. But you mentioned the Delaware game. That was the one where I was like, oh, man, like there's just no confidence here. Right. Like that's the only logical conclusion. Since then, Alex Falcons been pretty consistent, has been good as a field goal kicker.
But I mean, did have one blocked. And then last week, the miss. I mean, so
yeah,
to me,
the block was
he
a
didn't
long
hit the
one,
ball.
Though,
well. And, yeah, he admitted he didn't hit the ball well at all. Yeah.
And so I think those kind of situations will happen, and it's better from 50 some than like 25 yards or whatever, which is honestly a situation that I would always probably be saying that a coach should go for it to go back to the aggression mindset. But like, I think they need someone to just establish themselves that they can make from like 43 and in, right? Mm-hmm. That when you need points, you can get them. Otherwise, I think being aggressive, going for it, they don't find themselves on a lot of like fourth and 14s, fourth and nines. Right. You know what I mean? Like they're usually
fourth and
they're giving
nines,
themselves,
yeah.
they're giving themselves decisions to make, which is important, mm-hmm. right? Like it's a really good sign for the offense that you know, Yurcich and James Franklin and Stacey Collins, presumably as the special teams coordinator, have to make these calls, right? They have to make these decisions. And so I don't know that – I think the hope is probably for them that Drew Aller and the offense is good enough that it's just not a worry, right? Like you don't really have to worry about the kicking game too much. And then if you can get, like I said, to that 43 –
I mean, but John,
and
how many times have we seen game? I mean, tell this to Ohio State, right? Like you right. need to have confidence in your kicking game because it can come back to bite you in a big-time sure. situation. And you only have so many opportunities kicking in front of crowds, right? And to me, that's where I go back to the Delaware thing. And it's like, you would have really have liked to have seen him go back to that just because of that element of, all right, you've got the game put away. Now, maybe we see this against UMass, right? Maybe we see this against Northwestern if this starts to become a runaway. Because to me, like, you want to figure out what you have in game situations, right? They track everything. They chart everything. We don't know who, you know, what the performance looks like in practice. We can't see it. We don't know what those numbers are. But you have to believe that you've got to get those game reps in there. I enjoyed when I chatted with Alex Falcons after the Illinois game. I mean, just what a difference for him coming from Columbia to Beaver Stadium. And I was asking him about that and the difference in front of kicking here. The one thing he did mention is, like, of course, these are all new venues for him. Right, home and away. So you got to understand, right? Like, how does the wind blow at this one place, right? What about the grass here? What about the elements there? Oh yeah, Big Ten weather, right? It's going to be crazy at some point this year. So to me, the special teams, that's the one area that has really been the area of concern so far, because I mean, otherwise Penn State has been blowing the doors off of people and doing it really, really dominantly. But
well, I
that's,
think
that's
too,
the thing if, for me.
If special mm-hmm. teams are the concern, you're in a really good spot, right?
Like yeah, it oh, is, for sure.
It's there's no doubt that the kicking game is concerned. But like I said, I think as long as you can get comfortable, basically when you get to the 25 and in that you can make a field goal, I don't know that, you know, college kickers are college kickers. We've seen this over the years. I don't know that you're ever going to be comfortable even from like 47 and out, right? Like mm-hmm. it's just how it goes in the sport, especially in college. So I think as long as you get someone who can make the close enough ones, which I think Falcons is kind of showing that he can. You mentioned the block, you're right there, but that was a long one. And so I think as long as they have that, it's not too much of an issue. Personally, I never worry much about punting. I just like the idea is to never punt anyways. And so it's like if you're in a situation where you have to punt, you've already lost anyways. And you know what I mean? You've already lost the reps anyways. And so you're kind of already going to be in a negative spot. But I did think it was interesting. And Caden Saunders has been phenomenal as a punt mm-hmm. returner this year. But it was very coincidental that he muffed one. Immediately after he was glowed about last week,
all week
having the confidence. Yeah, it was honestly everyone should have seen
it was
it
jinx.
As soon as it got talked about at that level. But to me, that is like more of a concern. And to be clear, I'm not concerned, but that would be more of a concern
if you were concerned. Okay,
if they couldn't
sounds
handle
like you're concerned.
Not at all. But if they couldn't handle punts or anything like that, I think then I would be worried about special teams. Otherwise, I understand you're right. Like it anecdotally, there definitely feels like there's always these massive moments that like special teams has this huge impact on the game. At the end of the day, the offense and defense almost always have control of how you got into that situation in the first place. So if you can just be as elite as they are on defense and get to the point of that level of lead on offense, they're not there yet. They're probably top 15, 20 offense in the country right now. You get that to top 10, maybe even top 5. Special teams go out the window. You're just not worried at all.
Until it's a big moment, then you should be worried. Sure. But no, I think the shorthandedness of Caden Saunders, that's massive, right? Like you want a punt returner that when you're in some of these tough spots, just securing the catch sometimes is huge. And I even go back to the Iowa game, right? And James Franklin mentioned it today. He's like, this game started exactly how Iowa wanted it to start, right? Penn State's pinned in deep. But then to me, this is where you see signs of growth program-wide, right? They're pinned in deep. Yes, they're home, right? Different situation than it was 2 years ago in Kinnick. But there wasn't that panic, right? They weren't flustered. It was like, okay, this is not going well. We're starting this drive backed up. But they're able to work themselves out of it, right? And then the defense comes up with a takeaway, and then you're just like, okay, this thing's starting to roll. The complimentary football piece, it's massive. We're seeing it. They're doing it so well right now. You and I talked last week, and we said at some point, Drew Aller's going to turn the ball over. It's inevitable.
Maybe.
Didn't happen yet. Yeah, so maybe not, right?
Kind of maybe feels like maybe not at this point.
Maybe we go this entire season and Penn State does not have a turnover. That would be absolutely bonkers.
If Iowa can't get him, I don't know who's going to get him. I really thought going into that game that like he was going to get four. And now he did actually make one definitely interceptable pass. He lofted a ball into like open space where anyone could have picked it off. But he got away with it. And maybe that'll happen against Michigan and Ohio State and everything. But yeah, it's to not turn the ball over as a first-year starter against Iowa is pretty remarkable because that team loves turning people over. And to bring it to Northwestern, like, if he throws an interception this weekend, I will be floored. Like, the poise that he has shown is so
it could
different.
Be like, you know, tipped pass type of deal or clunks off even a receiver's hands, you know, into the DB's hands. How many times have we seen that, right?
At this point, it feels like it's not going to be his fault if it does happen because he has been so precise and everything and so poised in those situations. James, as we've mentioned before, keeps calling him Steady Eddie. Called Bo Prabil with that.
I was going to say,
so apparently just the whole quarterback room.
I'm building my case, John. He believes in Bo Prabil. And as soon as he called him a Steady Eddie,
that's the best evidence you've brought. That's the best evidence you brought because that is high praise from James. But it's a poise that you hadn't seen in 4 years at the quarterback position for Penn State, right? Like it just that didn't exist. And so you talk about a potential for a trap game against Northwestern, the potential for them to fall the way that Minnesota did. It takes a quarterback making some mistakes usually for that to happen, and I just don't think he's going to make them. Maybe he plays like he did against Illinois, and it's not his best game on the planet, and maybe there's a throw or two that he wishes he could have back because he didn't see someone open. But it's going to be generally mistake-free. I am curious, though, and I think this is the weekend to probably start this process. You didn't want to do it in the lead up to Iowa because of how good that defense is, but I want to see them kind of unleash him a little bit. You know what I mean? Like really start to lean. Yeah, lean into the passing game. Like take some of those chances, right, that you're confident that you can make. And if the turnover does come, have it be because you were being aggressive, because you were preparing for Ohio State and getting ready for those moments. Because like I said, leading up to Iowa, I understand not wanting to do that because you really do want to play conservatively. You don't want to turn the ball over. If you can just maintain possession, you're going to destroy that team just like they did. But against Ohio State, you've just got to win possessions by winning one-on-one battles. And you do that with a quarterback that can make those kind of elite throws. And I think they need to get him ready for those moments.
Yeah, they do need to start taking some shots down the field. James Franklin talked about it today. I've written about it. Story that I keep teasing that'll be up on Wednesday on The Athletic. I get into the numbers, too, looking at the attempts down the field and the yards through the air and the fact that Penn State, right, you know, at this point in the season, this juncture, they've been unwilling to even attempt that. But it's smart, right? It's like you look at what they did against Iowa. That was the right way to play that team. But now you're right, John. Like you need to start gearing up toward the marquee games. I think to me, like I think as a Penn State fan, you'd feel really good Saturday if two things happen. If Drew Aller comes out of this game, you see some connections on some deep shots, right? You see that. And two, the other thing, if one of these running backs really gets going. Like, to me, that's what you want to see, because we know what this defense is, or I feel like we've got a really good idea of what it is or the identity of it. I wouldn't have concerns about the defense. To me, it's just like you want to see that offense elevate to that next level, that level that you and I both think they're capable of, because they've got all this plethora of talent. But to me, that's what you want to see this weekend, because otherwise, like, this thing could probably get ugly in a hurry. And then we're talking about how soon do you get Drew Aller out of the game. But to me, that's what I'm looking at this weekend.
One of the two things you did not mention was winning the game. And that's because foregone conclusion. But I think it's a good statement of where this is at. I think the two things for me, like, I think one is win the game. 1A is get everyone out healthy.
Yeah.
Because even if you can't get there, you know, this week with some of those things, and I think you're right. Like, you want to see it now. You want to see doing it against Northwestern, because Northwestern's defense is halfway decent, but the it's still not great. I think you want to be healthy, and that matters more than any of this.
Because if you do it against UMass,
there's
still the caveat of like, okay, you're doing it, but it's against UMass, right? Like,
but you're preparing at least, I think, Aller mentally to do it, right? Because that's the week before Ohio State, mm-hmm. and I think that's more important than anything. Getting him adjusted to, hey, in these situations, maybe against Iowa, the read was check deep. If it's not there immediately, go to the flats, dump it off down there, find a quick, easy read. But maybe against UMass, you call some longer developing plays. You call some plays that maybe the first read is a deep route, and then the second one is in the intermediate rather than going short immediately. So I think getting him to process in that way, and I have all the faith in the world that he can. We've seen that he can. We know that he can. And I have all the faith in the world that he will. But you don't want to build the kind of the muscle memory of, okay, first look's not there, dump it. Like, you want to be able to go through everything that you need to as you go through progression. But yeah, this is, I mean, I don't want to say there's not a lot to gain for Penn State this weekend, but there really isn't, right? Like, they have more to lose. This is one of those situations where you have more to lose than more to gain. And that's why, like, James has always preached the 1-0 stuff. Like, everyone can say what they want about it, but it's for games like this. It's so you don't go out there and then fall into the trap. And then suddenly you're 4-1 with a loss to a Northwestern team that, like, before the Minnesota game was universally, like, regarded as a tire fire. You don't want to, you just don't want to get caught in that. And I think that's got to be the most important thing going into this weekend.
I'll put my prediction out there right now. I'm picking Penn State 48, Northwestern 14. I do think one of those touchdowns comes in garbage time with the reserves in, but 48-14, John, we haven't discussed this, so
we're
I have
close.
No idea what
you're doing. Okay. We're close. I have 42-10. I think the touchdown is in garbage time. The field goal is just like happenstance. Like, they break, you know, they get one 30-yard pass that gets them close enough, you know, something like that. I think it's going to feel like it's 100-0 though. Like, it's never going to feel that close. I don't think. I would be surprised if it ever seemed as if it was going to
by be. By noon Central, you'll be declaring it game over.
I don't think we'll get to noon. I think we'll get to 11:30. But I, you know, I'll have my final thoughts and analysis on SendaDaily.com later this week. But the things I keep hammering still remain the same, right? Like, it's get the reps, get healthy, and develop depth. You mentioned that depth earlier. That's the biggest keys this weekend by far.
Another quick note on the recruiting trail, because things have not slowed down since the whiteout.
They never slow down.
Penn State's picked up 3 commitments. All 3 are in the 2025 class. So it feels like, gosh, every couple hours you're getting one of those "we are better" notifications on Twitter, and it's just like, oh my gosh, things don't stop. But Penn State's 2025 class now has 5 verbal commitments. So things are starting to pick up there, and which I think is also like, yes, there's the whiteout effect, but these are also guys who've been here, visited multiple times, so not super jarring. But then you still got to round out that 2024 class, and we're in late September. You've got less than 2 months until the door, you know, the signing day, the early signing period. Gosh, can't even think of the name of it anymore. Until the early signing period hits, you've got, you know, the clock's ticking there. So how do they round out the class in 2024? That's going to be something of interest to me. I'll be hitting the road Thursday for Northwestern. I will be going through Wisconsin. We'll see what I come up with when I'm there. Who knows? Maybe there's a purpose there. Maybe I'm just going to have some beers. Who knows? We'll see.
It'll be beer. It's always the new Glarus. That's always the purpose of a trip to Wisconsin.
There could be more to it. There could be something more. I mean, how many times have we talked, written about how Penn State's recruiting Wisconsin? I mean, there could be something more to it.
John? No, it's going to be a nice, fun weekend of travel. We've talked about the sandwich trips around the Whiteout before to Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, it's another quick trip for me. This is actually quicker for me. So I'll be flying in Friday night and then flying out Sunday morning. Sad that I'm missing the London game, the first London NFL game of the
Toy Story game. Yeah.
Yeah. The Toy Story game. I'm not going to lie. I was really curious about that. Like, I just want to know.
Yeah, what I'm definitely recording that. I'm definitely recording and watching that. I want to know what it looks like.
I'll make it through like three plays. I just want to see it though. But no, I think that's a good place to leave it. It is going to be a blowout on Saturday in all likelihood. And we will be there afterwards to go over everything we saw with you guys live we will be on YouTube, excuse me. But as I said earlier, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Subscribe on YouTube. Watch us on YouTube if you would like. If you're just a listener right now, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps, like I said, when you're a new podcast, it helps us get introduced to more Nittany Lions fans like yourself.
Yeah, tell a friend. If you like the pod, tell a friend. Yes. If you don't tell them. John, or maybe
tell them
I
to
will
check it out and make your own opinion on that one.
That's true. I like that. Yeah, tell a friend, keep passing it on because we're going to be here all season. We look forward to doing the post-game show with you guys. It's going to be fun. We will have that to you by Sunday morning. And John, if all goes according to plan this weekend, maybe I will share a new Glarus beer with you for our post-game pod. Maybe.
So I will never, I'm not one to turn down beer. You know me.
So we will see. But yeah, this is definitely my beer trip. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to firing up the microphones again Saturday after what looks to be a very lopsided game in Evanston. So we'll talk to you guys then.